All right, there you go, a little Purcell trumpet concerto. Good morning and welcome to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. I'm Rick Moore. Your host is Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Poposky. We are a week before Thanksgiving, and Josh, last week's show, the last several have been, it blew me away, so I'm sure you got a great one lined up again today.
Well, we do. We have Heather Atwood back, who's going to share some recipes about Thanksgiving from her book. Tom Mantle, who is the newly elected president of the Cape Ann Symphony, will be with us talking about his role there and certainly the upcoming season for the symphony. Bruce Tobey will be in to do a little bit of a roundup on the postmortem, if you will, on the election. And then fourth guest is Professor Diane Ayotte from Montserrat College of Art, who is working in collaboration with the Cape Ann Museum here in town.
So we've got the professor and the professor. That sounds pretty good. All right. Okay, all that's coming up on Trending Now with Josh Arnold on MSONewsSports.com.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. One of the ways to judge a company is in its staying power. At Moynihan Lumber, we've been doing our thing now for 55 years. Serving all of Greater Boston, Moynihan Lumber offers lumber and building materials, doors and windows, decking, kitchen cabinets, and Ace Hardware. Visit Moynihan Lumber at any of our three locations, in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Hi, this is Jeff Klickstein, General Manager at Moore GMC in Danvers. Did you know that we're a family-owned and operated dealer that's been serving the North Shore since 1969? When you come to see us, you're treated like part of our family. GMC has a great lineup with Sierra pickups, the ever-popular Acadia, and the redesigned 2016 Terrain. We are the dealer that will provide you with the best buying experience possible. We are conveniently located off Route 128 at Exit 23, 80 High Street in Danvers. I personally invite all of you to come in, come visit us, see why our customers keep coming back for all their automotive needs.
People come in, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Sylvan Street Grill has a great new game time menu featuring delicious new dishes, specials, and all-time favorites, too.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Bradford Tavern, the Rowley Destination Restaurant, featuring many modern touches, nestled in a rustic setting, offering the finest steaks, seafood, and many quality daily specials. The Bradford Tavern is open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to midnight, serving lunch and dinner. See you soon at the Bradford Tavern in Rowley, 89 Haverhill Street, Route 133. And check us out at BradfordTavern.com.
Hello, sports fans. This is Wally, the voice of Honeydew Donuts. All right, you're getting ready to go to a game. I don't care if it's morning, afternoon, or night. Don't forget, stop into Honeydew Donuts and get yourself a cup of coffee. How about that large iced coffee? That Mocha Madness one is unbelievable. You'll think you went to Honeydew Heaven. So remember, you heard it here first on MSONewsSports.com. And remember the name. It's Honeydew Donuts, the only way to go.
And welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is returning from last week to share some holiday recipes for the upcoming Thanksgiving, some from our book, Heather Atwood. Heather, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh. Nice to be here.
Well, tell us, you must be very busy in between your blogging and your articles for the paper and promoting your book. So I appreciate that you take some time to share some time with the listening audience. What do you have for us today?
Well, this is really the week to talk about food, so I am really happy to be here, Josh, and to share some of my ideas from my cookbook. And again, this is the week for my cookbook because it is, name is In God We Trust, the celebrated cuisine of coastal Massachusetts. So I'm really excited to share some of the recipes in it because I chose recipes that were truly loyal to the coast of Massachusetts and the ingredients we have here, but I also wanted things that were really delicious. So I'm going to talk about four recipes, and not only do they stay loyal to the Thanksgiving tradition, but they are also incredibly delicious and kind of inventive. So, shall I go?
Go ahead.
Ready? Okay. So the first two are basically composed salads. One of I think everybody's pet peeves about Thanksgiving are the vegetables tend to be sort of a sameness to them, you know, and it's kind of a standard Brussels sprout dish, the mashed potatoes, the squash. And both the dishes I'm going to talk about are just dynamic. They really are. The first is a Brussels sprout dish. It comes from a restaurant that used to be in Newburyport that specialized in using the best New England ingredients. So you take 4 cups of fresh Brussels sprouts, you trim the ends, you dice them, you blanch those, so just put them in boiling salted water for a couple of minutes, put them, take them out, drain them, pat them dry. So you have this big bowl of fluffy Brussels sprouts. Sort of, you know, they've been diced, so the whole dish feels a little fluffy. You then roast some shiitake mushrooms, you toast some croutons. So there's some parts to this dish, but it's still, the textures all come together to be very interesting, and you don't have a mushy thing. So you have, now you toss together the Brussels sprouts, the shiitake mushrooms, the croutons, and then you make candied bacon. I don't know if anyone has ever had candied bacon or not, but it is one of life's divine pleasures. You take slices of bacon, maybe 4 slices, cut them into 1-inch lengths, toss them in some brown sugar, and roast them in the oven for 15 minutes. So they become this, you know, another texture to this dish that is, you know, crispy and sweet and bacony. So that adds another level of deliciousness. The whole thing is sort of spread out on a platter, and you make a dressing for this with pancetta. You wrap the pancetta in a pan, let that cool a little bit, put it in a blender with molasses, mustard, and some olive oil. So, again, all these ingredients are kind of traditional New England Thanksgiving-y, that's an adjective, flavors, but they come together in this just beautiful composition of textures and tastes. Now, this would be something if you're traveling on Thanksgiving and you have to bring a dish, which so many people must. This is a showstopper. It really is. So the next one is a similar showstopper, equally beautiful. This comes from the Wampanoag tribe, actually. It's a composed salad. So the base is bib lettuce tossed in olive oil and lemon juice, so you have this nice, fresh taste on the bottom. You spread that out on a platter, and then you roast butternut squash cubes with red onion. Put that, chop them, chop the butternut squash, slice the red onion into wedges, toss it together, throw it in a roasting pan. The onion gets sort of sweet and melded. The butternut squash gets a little brown and crispy. Lay out that out over the bib lettuce. Fresh blueberries go over the top of that. Toasted sunflower seeds go over that. And then you make another really interesting dressing with dried blueberries, balsamic vinegar, and olive oil. It all goes in the blender together, and it's this kind of unctuous taste. I describe this salad as looking like a quina or gay head on late summer afternoon. You have the, you know, the beautiful orange of the butternut squash, the blueberries, the sunflower seeds, and then that bright green lettuce below. And this dressing is just so interesting. It's kind of thick, so you just sort of dollop it around, and it just brings everything together in a not sweet a taste, but just enough to bring some bright sweetness, I guess, to the whole thing. Whenever I serve this dish, my husband, who's kind of skeptical about sweetness in a salad, but, I don't know, and then he tastes these flavors all together, and he says, this is really amazing. So, again, this is a showstopper of a dish to carry if you need to go visit someone for Thanksgiving. Hey. So those are my two composed salad ideas. Shall I move on to dessert?
Sure.
Okay. So, I really pride myself in having found dishes that are so loyal to the coast of Massachusetts, but they are, they're, as I said before, they're still really delicious. And both of these dishes, these desserts, come from Wampanoag tribe members also. The first is from an amazing man named Earl Mills. He is actually Chief Flying Eagle. He is the Wampanoag Indian chief. He lives in Mashpee. He's 90 years old. He grew up on Cape Cod. rod and, you know, grew up with all the amazing fishing and shellfishing and hunting and foraging traditions. I mean, that was just the way this man lived. He wasn't thinking it was anything in particular. He grew up, he worked in restaurants on Cape Cod because that's what kids sort of did. He joined the Army. He was a star football player in high school, by the way, so he was a real athlete. Came back to Cape Cod and started a restaurant. His restaurant, The Flume, was the best restaurant on Cape Cod for many years. It was written up in Gourmet magazine. It was the destination place on Cape Cod. And he was really just cooking the recipes that he grew up with local ingredients, and prepared the way his mother prepared dishes. But then he also gathered some of the recipes from these restaurants he'd worked in high school. So it was kind of an amalgam of traditional restaurant cuisine and then Earl Mills family's cuisine. So his Indian pudding recipe was the thing to have at The Flume. And he was generous enough to give me his Indian pudding recipe. So that is in the book. I think we can post these recipes, can we, Josh? On either your website or mine?
Yes,
sure.
If she sends them, we can post them, absolutely.
Yeah, I've got, absolutely.
Okay. So Earl Mills, again, it was the Indian pudding was one of the things that everyone had to have when they went to The Flume. He makes it a little bit differently than other people. He adds a little grape nuts and tapioca to the pudding, and he cooks it in a double boiler on top of the stove, so it's really smooth and velvety. A lot of Indian pudding recipes are steamed in an oven, and they get a little bit granular and sometimes slightly funky from the steam. So the fact that this is cooked in a double boiler keeps it really, really velvety and smooth, and I think that's the piece that people loved at The Flume. So my last dessert is Wampanoag Cranberry Crumble. This recipe comes from a woman named Gladys Wittes, who is a member of the Wampanoag tribe. And cranberries to the Wampanoag are a sacred ingredient. They actually have a sacred cranberry day, the second Tuesday in November. The tribe goes out to a wild cranberry bog in Lobsterville on Martha's Vineyard, and they have this whole celebration out there. So I felt like it was really important to have a cranberry recipe from the Wampanoags. But you can set all that aside. This is the best crumble I have ever had. It's just the combination of cranberries. She uses pecans. The ratio of butter to nut to cranberries is perfect. It is just a perfect cranberry crumble. So that's my list for today.
Well, that's great. And I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and you know, I'm sitting here listening to you and thinking, oh my God, I should have had you on last because then I could go eat. But
well, no. I really think that these are delicious recipes, whatever their heritage is. That they are really special things that you could bring to the Thanksgiving table.
Well, and please do forward those to me, and I'll get them to Rick so they can be posted on our website. I'm sure the listening audience will want to tap into those, and also buy your book if they haven't bought it by now.
Well, thank you for that plug. I appreciate
that. We need your contact information.
Her blog and so on.
Can you give us your blog and your email?
No, not yep. Email, but
book. So my email, email first?
Blog. Give us your blog, I'm sorry.
Blog first, okay. So it's so far, but if you just Google heatherotwood.com, it comes right up.
Okay. Very well.
Or you could do Heather Atwood's Food for Thought also.
Good. Thanks.
I have one more. Oh. Heather, are you there? Okay. Can you still hear me? Heather?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes?
Okay, fine. Yeah, my last question, we want to promote what you're doing as well. So obviously your book, name of the book, where to get it, and then your features in the Gloucester Daily Times.
Sure. So my book is called In Cod We Trust, From Sea to Shore, The Celebrated Cuisine of Coastal Massachusetts. You can purchase it on my blog. You can purchase it at Toad Hall Bookstore, or the bookstore in Beverly Farms has a lot of copies right now. I know that. And my feature in the Gloucester Daily Times, it runs about every 2 weeks, not always. I just did a great story. I love this story on Dogtown Dyer Brew, which is being served at Cape Ann Brewery. This is a special beer that they brewed with locally foraged ingredients. It's a delicious beer, and it's a really good story. So you could find that if you Googled Heather Atwood, Dyer Brew, the Gloucester Times.
Awesome, awesome. Thanks, Heather, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Okay, thanks very much.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye. Oh, man, awesome, awesome. I tell you what, Josh, if you can get her to send you the recipes, then we can certainly post those recipes right on your Trending Now page. You can do that, Trending Now post. Okay, we'll be right back.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies, and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. One of the ways to judge a company is in its staying power. At Moynihan Lumber, we've been doing our thing now for 55 years. Serving all of Greater Boston, Moynihan Lumber offers lumber and building materials, doors and windows, decking, kitchen cabinets, and Ace Hardware. Visit Moynihan Lumber at any of our three locations, in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Gloria Food Store is still Beverly's number one deli, and no matter what New England weather is thrown at us, Gloria is open. With fresh bread delivered from Sunray Bakery every morning, Gloria can provide party platters, calzones, hot trays, cold trays, salad trays, and finger sandwiches for whatever you have planned. Call in your order at 978-922-3613, stop in at 268 Rantoul Street, or visit GloriaFoodStore.com.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Tom Mantle. Tom, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh. Thanks for having me.
Well, we start each of our interviews off. Tell us a little bit about you. Of course, I know you from political days and other things, church and so forth. But tell us about your background, family, your career, and so forth. And then we want to talk about what you're doing with the Caveman Symphony.
Sure, thanks. I grew up in New York. I grew up in Westchester County. My grandparents lived across the street. And my grandparents had a summer place on Weaver Chic Beach, Coffins Beach. And we used to come up here in the summertime for a couple of weeks every year. My grandfather was the oldest of six boys who grew up in Hamilton. And when we moved back, when I took a job up here in 1980, we were looking around for a place to buy, and it was one of those winters where there wasn't a lot on the market, and the first place that came on the market that we liked and could afford was in Gloucester, on Wheeler's Point. And so we lived, my wife Ann and I and our two children, Ryan, who was two when we moved here, and Kate, who was born here at Addison Gilbert, moved here in 1981. And we spent 12 wonderful years on Wheeler's Point until employment circumstances took us back down to Washington, D.C. Now, the kids grew up here, they went to school here, and that's where I first got to know my colleague Dave Benjamin, who from the Horribles Parade, and he also he's a retired music teacher and taught Ryan saxophone for Al Mailey. You know, we went to the symphony back then. The symphony was at that point mostly a volunteer community organization. Ann and I moved back here because Gloucester and Cape Ann became home for us, and we moved back here 6 years ago. And Dave immediately said, come on, you need to get involved with the symphony. And I've been involved with the symphony ever since. And I have to say that the difference in the quality of the orchestra between the time when we left in 93 and when we got back in 2009 is just absolutely amazing. Most of that credit goes to both the board, the prior board, but also our current maestro, who is Yoichi Udagawa. And is just anyone who's seen Yoichi in action knows what a completely energetic and entertaining guy he is. So, as far as the other stuff, the personal stuff, like I said, I grew up in New York. I went to West Point, graduated in 1971, spent 5 years in active duty in the Army and 21 in the reserves. Got my master's degree at the Kennedy School in Boston and in Cambridge at Harvard. You know, I've done a lot of sort of professional analytical things, starting at the Office of Management and Budget and then up here at a data place out in Andover, Wilmington, and then starting in the early 90s when we moved back down to D.C., I started doing a lot of work with healthcare, and I'm now an independent self-employed healthcare consultant.
Good.
Work out of my house, so I can work anywhere, and this is the best place to work.
Well, that's great. Now, you got involved with the Cape Ann Symphony, and I know that you recently took over for Dave Stotzer, who was the Cape Ann Symphony president. And how's that transition going? And what are you? What is your role as president? What are you asked to do in that capacity?
Well, probably the most important thing that the public sees is I introduce the orchestra at every concert, which you will see me do next Saturday night at 8 p.m. and next Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. at the Manchester Essex High School. Where we've been fortunate to have conduct the symphony performances in the last 3 years. The symphony was originally based at Fuller, the Fuller School, but because of the condition of that facility, we had to find another venue. And the folks at Manchester have been great. And I guess my job as president is to make sure that stuff gets done. You know, it's a volunteer board, and everybody's got other things to do. And one of the ways that any nonprofit organization can get into trouble, and we've had rough patches before without going into a whole lot of detail, is that, you know, sometimes folks don't pay attention. We have a budget of about $225,000 a year. We have to start from scratch every year to raise those funds. The box office pays for some of it, but not all of it, and so we have to rely on the generosity of our donors, both corporate sponsors who sponsor the concerts and then individual donors who have been quite generous to the symphony over the years. But we have to, you know, our development folks work very hard, and they have to keep the donor base engaged and entertained, which we endeavor to do. And then we also have to make sure that the word gets out. So the other big function that we do is to keep is marketing, to let folks know who we are, where we are, you know, when we're having performances, how they buy tickets, and we do that a number of ways, both advertising and publicity. There was just one of Gail McCarthy's great articles about the next performance in yesterday's Gloucester Daily Times. We have posters up all over town. We have a constant contact email list that we send out information about, that we keep busy, we keep people well informed. And then, you know, it's the little things. It's we do some special events from time to time. We just had a wonderful concert, benefit concert put on by Chelsea Berry, at Rockport Music in October, that exceeded our expectations. Just a fabulous Sunday afternoon. And we just have to, I guess my job is to make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, and people on the board and the people we engage to help us do what they set out to do. And as long as that happens, everything works out pretty smoothly.
Great. What are some of the concerts that are planned for this year, to the extent that you can say?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. The holiday concert is a combination of sort of traditional symphonic music that's sort of holiday oriented. I'm going to and it's accompanied by the Cape Ann Chorus led by Wendy Betts. We're going to do there's a piece by Anderson Christmas Festival, a piece by Humperdinck, Hansel and Gretel Prelude, and John Williams Merry Christmas. We're also going to reprise Rob Bradshaw. Rob Bradshaw is one of our local composers who's written we both commissioned pieces by him and Rob's written a whole key band suite that we do pieces of from time to time, but we're going to do the Yankee Swap again. And then the chorus is really embarked on something very ambitious and that I haven't heard before, which is 12 Days of Christmas, which is the traditional carol, but it's also interspersed with sections of symphonic music, as Gail described in her article yesterday. That's next weekend, 8 p.m. and 2 p.m. It's 8 p.m. on Saturday and 2 p.m. on Sunday. In March, on the 20th, with Sunday afternoon, you know, we got a really exciting program. We're going to start out with Beethoven's Fifth. Da-na-na-na! And then we're going to have a guitar concerto and a soloist, Grisha Goryachev, who is just phenomenal. The Concierto de Aranjuez. Again, I haven't heard this. And then also, we're doing a world premiere of a work for koto, which is a Japanese instrument, which we've done before. So the March concert is a little bit different, but we're building it as a world tour, a global tour, I beg your pardon. And then in May, the three Bs, Bach, Brahms, and Beethoven. And in the Beethoven piece is going to have three soloists. It's going to have Robert Levin, who's a pianist, Lucia Lin, who we've had all these soloists in the past, Lucia Lin on violin and Owen Young on cello. The program in May, and that is May 21st, Saturday evening at 8 p.m., Brandenburg Concerto No. 3, Brahms Symphony No. 3 in F major, and Beethoven's Triple Concerto for violin, cello, and piano, where the soloists are going to play. Now, there's one more thing that we're working on, one more event that we're working on, which is in the planning stages. We've been approached by Gloucester's Maritime Heritage Center to investigate the possibility of doing an outdoor concert next summer on the Harriet Webster Pier at the Heritage Center. And we were first approached about this last spring, and we've had to undertake, and the Heritage Center has had to undertake a number of investigations to see whether we could make this work, whether this would be feasible. One of the things is we had to establish whether we had to get the building inspector involved about the structural integrity of the pier and, you know, the seating capacity and the fire department and all that. We've received, you know, thumbs up from that. As some of your listeners probably know, the pier is going to be taken down because National Grid is going to be dredging that section of the harbor. So we're planning this for Friday night, July 29th, with a rain date of the 30th, to coincide with the high tide at 8 p.m. on Friday. And the reason we're doing that is because we're planning on having the three historic schooners that are based in Gloucester, the Adventure, the Lannan, and the Ardell, moored adjacent to the pier, adjacent to the orchestra, and have seats on those schooners and also have seats on the pier. Program is, I've just got a draft of the program, and we're going to take it from there. The real thing here is, since this is going to be a concert outside, there are some additional costs involved over and above what we would normally do. And so right now we're engaged in planning with the Maritime Heritage Center to see whether we can raise the money, the funds from donors, to be able to put the concert on without putting the fortunes of either the Heritage Center or the Symphony at risk. And we expect to have a formal announcement about our, you know, go-no-go somewhere on or about the 1st of March. So we're all very excited about it. I think, you know, with a lovely summer night in Gloucester and the sun going down, there'll be nothing better than to sit and comfortably and listen to the symphony perform. It's really going to be a lot of fun. Tentatively, we're calling it Pops on the Pier. Even the symphonic program that I've seen is pretty rousing. So it should be a really, really fun night.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and certainly sharing all the good things that the Cape Ann Symphony is doing and plans to do in the coming year, and wish you the very the greatest success in your new role there.
Josh, one more thing. We sold out our holiday concert last year. We sold out our September concert this year. We're expecting to sell out the holiday concerts again next weekend, Thanksgiving weekend. So I would urge any of your listeners who have not bought their tickets yet to do so, and they can do that very simply by going to our website, capeannsymphony.org, all one word, all together, all lowercase, and they can buy tickets right online.
Great. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Josh.
Take care.
Bye. Bye.
Hi, this is Jeff Klickstein, General Manager at Moore GMC in Danvers. Did you know that we're a family-owned and operated dealer that's been serving the North Shore since 1969? Our service department ranks as one of the best in customer satisfaction because we respect our customers' busy schedule and we do repairs as quickly as possible with the least amount of inconvenience to you. We are conveniently located off Route 128 at Exit 23, 80 High Street in Danvers. I personally invite all of you to come in, come visit us, see why our customers keep coming back for all their automotive needs.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our guest is former mayor of Gloucester, Bruce Tobey. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh. Good to be back with you.
Well, we had a lot of folks on talking about the election before the election, and I wanted to find a spot where we could do a little bit of a post-mortem. And I guess you being one of the resident experts, or as Rick likes to refer to you as the professor, share with us what you would take, what you would say is some of the takeaways from this election.
Well, I'll couch your observation of my expertise in the following sense. You're only as expert as the accuracy of your last prediction.
Yeah.
I would say the predictions kind of bore out in this case. The mayor's race was going to be a real strong effort by the McGarry camp to maximize votes in wards 1-1 and 4-2. And the Romeo Taken effort was going to be maximized votes in wards 2 and 3, with each looking to blunt the strength of the other in those areas where they were looking to maximize strength. And it appeared to be the case very strongly. That's how the game played, and the Romeo Taken folks played it best. And I think what that captured was a sense within the community that this was time for more of a focus on traditional community building. In the months that Safatia has been mayor, in the aftermath of her predecessor's departure, I think that's what we saw a lot of, a lot more community involvement, a lot more engagement by the folks who live here rather than decision-making in a front office with the door closed, and that resonated. Now, there's a time when we needed that kind of attention, when the financial crisis was biting the community hard, but I think folks saw that that time had passed and that the transition to a more open and locally oriented approach was working and they ought to continue, and I think that's what she brought. I think that's what people were drawn to.
Okay. Well, yeah, I noticed the pattern that's run in the past. So goes 3-2, so goes the city. That rang true again this year. Whoever won in the mayoral contest, at least, Ward 3, Precinct 2, won the election.
Yeah, it's a funny phenomenon. Precinct 3-2, which is the neighborhoods around the Grant Circle, ranging from Riverview down to Centennial Avenue and up Gloucester Avenue, It really is when you look at the demographics and all the characteristics of a place. It's the real melting pot of Gloucester. It's where all our diversity is best reflected in a single place. And I'll tell you, every time I ran for local office, however I placed in 3-2 was how I placed at the end. And I think that's often the case, and that was clearly the case here.
Yeah. What is your sense of how others benefited from the strategies that were deployed for getting out the vote among the mayoral candidates?
Well, as you and I both know, the down-ticket candidates, the at-large and ward councilors and school committee candidates, are kind of powerless to really drive a vote out. It's whether or not there's a mayoral race and the intensity of it that determines the turnout. And this was an intense one. And I think the elements I spoke to a couple of minutes ago, you know, what folks chose when they chose a mayor, picking Sasaki overwhelmingly, it did spill over. I think it spilled over in Ward 5, where a political newcomer with, you know, multi-generational roots in his ward, Sean Nolan, prevailed. And in part because Sasaki's organization pulled a vote that was going to be probably predisposed his way. And the same thing happened in the at-large race with, I think, in particular, Joe Orlando being the beneficiary of the strength that, of the vote in Wards 2 and 3, which I think favored him heavily and skewed his numbers greater than they'd have been based on the turnout in the other three precincts. And then lastly, Paul's strength in 1-1 in particular, I think, played to the benefit of Scott Memhard as against you know, a longtime veteran councilor looking to come back, and Everett Brown.
Great. What one of the things that we asked people during who were running for office, particularly in Gloucester, about the sense of it being a bipartisan election, and you know, the charter clearly states that the election should not be bipartisan, and yet in this last election, you saw a lot of activity by Democrats pushing Democratic candidates and Republicans pushing Republican candidates, Republican state committees sending out literature in support of certain candidates who happen to be Republican. Weigh in on that for us and tell me, was that a trend now, or is this a one-shot deal, or and what are the ramifications post-election for that?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is supposed to be a nonpartisan election. You know, there's no Democratic or Republican way to plow snow, to pave streets, to clean beaches, to do all the many things that local government is charged to do. I do work in my law practice in communities with partisan local governmental structures, and it's complicated enough without adding that element. It doesn't make things easier. I would say right now it's a one-shot phenomenon that we saw, but I pray to God it doesn't turn into a trend, because a trend starts with that one first shot. You know, the Republican committee was actively recruiting, actively endorsing, actively campaigning. That's troublesome. But the Democratic City Committee, though perhaps a little bit more under cover of night, was just as active in the mayoral campaign. And, you know, there's some troubling rumors on the street that some prominent Democrats got leaned on pretty heavy to, if not toe the line, stay out of the local endorsement option. And you know what? That's just not right. That's just not right. And I would think that all those folks ought to think long and hard about what they're doing and who they're doing it for and how they're doing it. I mean, you know, I'm a Democrat. I'm not running for the Democratic City Committee again. They offended me. And I think they and their Republican brothers on the other side of the aisle probably offended any person who thinks long and hard about what makes local government work in Gloucester.
Well, it used to be cultural mores of organizations, parties, and stuff. You know, if you had two Democrats running for office, you didn't choose up sides. You stayed neutral, and you didn't push the party in any particular direction. And that, you know, I don't. My sense is that didn't happen this time. We didn't stay home and follow the thing. It's not to say you have to do that, but it seemed that way.
I agree with you, Seth. I really believe that that's what happened this time. And A couple of the councilors who were elected were part of a Republican ticket, so-called. It's no secret that the Democratic intelligentsia fell in behind Paul McGarry. Good luck to him for that. But on the other hand, DeFazio Romero Taken's father was a long-time Democrat who cared about traditional blue-collar Democratic values very deeply in this community. So I think they need to knock it off.
Well, doesn't that presence, though, at least give the premise of hurting the party? I mean, doesn't that now, is there going to be a lunch, a breakfast, or dinner to bring the Democrats back together again, or the Republicans back together again? Or has this election become, was it so divisive that you now have the McGarry camp and the Safavia camps within the Democratic Party so that when it comes time to run for state office, you're a fraction?
It's hard to say. It really is hard to say, Josh. I mean, I can tell you I've been part of this conversation that we'll do an event for the mayor that will seek to bring some healing in and have that sort of bipartisan flavor to it that hopefully builds some bridges. A community can be very badly hurt if it's not able to go, particularly now in Massachusetts, to the state house and simultaneously talk to Democratic leaders in the legislature who are in charge and their respective sector and a Republican governor who's, you know, well-established and well-regarded right now. We need that kind of balance.
Okay. What do you take away on the fluoride issue? Fluoride, we're going to keep the fluoride in the water for another, well, until somebody comes along and says not to, but it was a very interesting campaign, and a lot of people, a lot of information saturated the airwaves and the newspapers. I saw that in the final week, the dental lobbies were taking out full-page ads every night. Any thoughts on that?
Well, just that there's so much passion in the realm of the folks who wanted fluoride removed from the water supply. And you got to respect that. I'm a water industry professional in my day job, and that passion, you got to encourage it because it leads to, much better environmental regulation and, frankly, I would hope folks would change the focus, thinking out loud here, so that it's less about community by community referenda and more towards a comprehensive review to see if there's a different, better way that the public health concerns that the advocate for removing fluoride care deeply about can be met.
Okay. Well, very well. Last-minute observations. We've got about a minute and a half left. Anything else that you can add about what are the takeaways from this election?
The stability of the school committee membership amazes me, genuinely amazes me. You and I can both remember times,
yeah.
And Rick, too, because he's so much older than the both of us.
Right.
you aren't getting away unscathed, Rick.
Thanks.
Incumbents would be defeated, incumbents would come back, and then once defeated, be elected again, big fields. It's kind of amazing that when there are six seats to be filled, only eight people run.
And it's often team school committee, too.
Say it again?
It's often like team school committee. It's almost like they're running as a group.
I always worry about any organization that's got some groupthink going on, and I'm not going to hide my feelings. I still look at that group a little askance because of their passive adherence to policies that led to the fundamental wasting of a municipal asset full of school.
Oh.
Less groupthink, more independent conversation, and conflicting points of view worked through.
We just had Tom Mantle on, who was is president of the Cape Ann Symphony, and he spoke of the Fuller School having been the home of the Cape Ann Symphony for so many years, and because of the deplorable conditions, they've had since moved to Manchester High School for all of their concerts. And the loss of that as an asset for the city has been felt and echoed by many people.
not a good thing, and I agree with
it
you.
It was. Back in the day when I worked in schools, that was the best school we had, or one of the top two.
Yep, that, and it could still be that. Had groupthink not cast a die for the ultimate destruction of that building as a public asset.
Great. Thank you for being a guest. As always, appreciate your perspective and input as the professor, as Rick likes to refer to you as. And we'll have you back again sometime soon.
I look forward to it. You be
thanks.
Well, have a great Thanksgiving.
You too. Thanks, Bruce.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're thinking about replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson Woodwright replacement windows. Why Anderson? With low E glass, low maintenance exteriors, and rich wood interiors, you can turn simple window replacement into significant home improvement. See the Anderson Woodwright replacement windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in North Reading, Beverly, and Plastow, New Hampshire.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
After immunizing more than 2 billion children, Rotary Club members are close to wiping polio from the face of the earth. Thanks to a matching grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, every dollar Rotary raises will work twice as hard to protect children against polio forever.
Rotary is a worldwide network of community volunteers dedicated to helping people in need. Rotary believes the right group of people working together can make communities and the world a better place. Make an impact. Join a Rotary Club in Rhode Island or Massachusetts. For more, go to rotarydreams.org.
To Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Professor Diane Ayotte from Montserrat College of Art. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation, Josh.
Well, we start each interview asking folks to tell us a little bit of about themselves, your bio, if you will, and then we want to talk about what you're doing at Montserrat College of Art, and in particular what you're doing in collaboration with the Cape Ann Museum.
Yeah, sure. I'm a painter and a professor, as you know, at Montserrat. And I show my work at Catherine Martell Fine Arts in New York City. And I've been doing that, showing with her for a number of years now, 8 to 10 years or so. And luckily, this December, I'll be showing at the Trident Gallery in Gloucester on Main Street, which is a really nice opportunity to show my work locally. And it's right down the street from the Cape Ann Museum, which is kind of nice. And my work at Montserrat involves teaching in both the foundation departments, which is the freshman year, and in the painting and drawing departments. I designed the spin-off course as an experiential learning course in collaboration with the Cape Ann Museum. And work started that work on that a couple of years ago, and this is the first time we are offering the course and having the course take place this fall semester.
And what does that entail?
Well, I designed the course so that it's called spin-off, so that it reflects the studio center of the course, whereby the students spin off of the Cape Ann Museum collection or Cape Ann itself. It basically, we toured Cape Ann. Courtney Richardson, the former education director at Cape Ann Museum, led us on a great tour of Cape Ann. We did that for a whole day. The students read This Other Gloucester by James F. O'Gorman, as well as other catalogs from the Cape Ann Museum exhibitions. And they did a lot of readings and responses, and combined with that tour and a response to that tour, which is very exciting for them to learn about history, industry, the environment of Cape Ann, and its links to cultural expressions, both in poetry and in art forms, as well as in the maritime objects and instruments in the collection of the museum. So after the tour, we spent two full days just touring the collection and looking at every part of the collection. And then students were presented with contemporary artists whose work I felt linked to these various aspects of the collection. So my senior teaching associate and I prepared these presentations for the students to help them make their own links in contemporary art to what is in the museum.
Great. And this is your first semester of putting this in play?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it had to go through, of course, the college. It had to be approved by the different committees and the faculty. I had worked with the Cape Ann former education director, Courtney Richardson, all along the way from the initial idea throughout the execution of the course. And it is in a part of Montserrat. It's in a category called Experiential Learning, XL. And the college has this new program over the last several years where it collaborates with various other institutions in the community to create out of the studio classroom environments in connection with what we do here. So the students were at the Cape Ann Museum. We were back and forth a number of times, but we were also here in the studio, which is the heart of the course, where they were making the work. And we also had the opportunity to have a couple of people from Cape Ann come to one of our coffee and crit mornings at the college, where they had the opportunity to give the students feedback about their work. And then after a number of weeks, we started to prepare for the exhibition. Students wrote proposals for their studio work, and we critiqued them both singularly and in groups. And then those proposals eventually wove into the statements about their work, which will be shown in the museum. At least a selection of their works will be shown in the museum. Tonight's the opening reception from 5 to 7, and the exhibition goes through December 3rd at the museum.
Great. And if people want to do that, what do they have to do? Just check with the Cape Ann Museum?
Yeah, tonight is a reception. It's open to the public from 5 to 7. The students are showing in the atrium on the second floor. It's an open space around the stairway. And they can view the exhibition during museum hours up through the 3rd of December.
Great. Now, you mentioned that your work will be on display coming up soon. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. I have a solo exhibition at Trident Gallery, and Matthew Swift is the owner and director of that gallery, and that will open on December 12th, which is a Saturday evening, also from 5 to 7, and it will run through January 4th at Trident Gallery. And it's a solo show, so viewers will be able to see quite a few pieces of my work.
And what is your work? What are you, oil or watercolor? Or?
Well, most of my work is mixed media.
Okay.
I tend to use acrylic paint. I am a painter, and my work is abstract. It involves mixed media and a lot of pattern and repetition. And, you know, you can see it on DianaArt.com, too. People could look on the website, but it's always better to see the work in person, so I'm thrilled to be able to show it in Gloucester, too, which is a great, great place. I love Gloucester. I love Cape Ann. And it's been really wonderful to work there to focus, you know, one of my courses on Cape Ann this semester.
Good. And what is what are some of the classes that you teach at the college?
Yeah, I teach a number of courses. The ones I teach mostly every semester are 2D design in the foundation department and a painting too called contemporary practice. And then I also teach a number of other courses like the artist notebook, which is focusing on various kinds of workbooks, sketchbooks, documentation books that students can keep for their work as planning tools or as art pieces in themselves. And then I created another course a few years ago I've taught a couple times now called Painting as Object, which is an upper-level painting exploring the questions, what is an image and what is an object? And it deals with a lot of contemporary issues in painting, sculpture, and installation, and how they cross over.
Wow, that sounds exciting. What, in terms of you teach students to paint, whether it's acrylic or oil, or?
It depends on the course.
Okay.
Yeah. So in contemporary painting practice, I review a lot of the contemporary materials and methods, and so more up-to-date kinds of materials, where other course at the college, another course that teaches the more traditional ones, starting with rabbit skin glue and those kinds of, you know, more traditional materials.
Great. Anything else you'd like to share with the audience? We have a couple minutes left.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to just say that the exhibition at the Cape Ann Museum called Spinoff involves seven students, and they are two seniors, and the rest of them are juniors. And most of them are working in painting, some realistic, some abstract. And one artist student has an installation in the Cape Ann Museum. Tonight you'll be able to see this. It's called Washed Up, and it's a wall installation. This student artist has collected things that have washed up on the beaches in Gloucester. And she's also a creative writing minor, so she has written flash fiction for each object. So they're cataloged and numbered. And I think there'll be an iPad with that installation, so when you're looking at one of the objects that is washed up on your beaches, you can then click on the number on the iPad and hear her flash fiction piece for each individual object, which is kind of an interesting project.
That sounds fascinating. You know, I grew up near the water, and of course, walking around the back shore or along the beach was, a fairly frequent practice, and always looked to see what was coming up. We collected driftwood as kids, and you always waited for one of the lobster pots to come up or stuff. But it's lots of other things floating as well.
Right, pieces of netting, all kinds of things. And now, of course, we have the problem with trash. There are pieces like of trash, of cigarette butts, things that she found and crafted her creative writing pieces from.
Great. Well, thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. We want to wish you the very best in the exhibit that's coming up at Cape Ann Museum starting this evening. And certainly with your personal exhibit coming up again in December.
Yes, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to talk with you, Josh.
Great. Thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, what a show. Four dynamic, authentic New England recipes.
Yep.
The professor and another professor.
Yep.
You got Bruce Tobey and you got Diane Iott. And what am I missing?
Mantle.
Yeah, and Tom and the Cape Ann Symphony. Holy rollies. Super, super, super stuff. And
well, I was at the North Shore Chamber of Commerce banquet, annual dinner the other night, and approached a number of people who will be on our show, forthcoming shows. So I haven't scheduled them in yet, but certainly they'll be a guest in December or January.
Okay. Okay, we got football coming up tonight on MSONewsSports.com on Channel A only. It will be audio only as the MIAA doesn't permit us to do the video. But it will be the big one, Division III semifinals, state semifinals in football. It's Melrose versus Danvers at Manning Field. Game time at 7 and our pregame show at 6 p.m. And, of course, don't forget North Shore Sports Night on Monday night. We're going to take off next week. We're going to enjoy football and Thanksgiving and all that. And so we want to wish everyone a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Great. Certainly.
All right. So we'll see you in a couple of weeks. This is MSONewsSports.com, and this is Trending Now with Josh Arnold.
This is MSO Web Radio at morestuffonline.com.